Brothers of War. 999.M30, 6 years before the betrayal at Istvan III. 1. The banners lay broken at the foot of the Iron Mountain. The dead lay with them, still heaped over the trenches, their flesh slowly fuming into the cold air. There had not been time for the flies and insects to come and begin their feast. They would, though. Even within the ice reaches, the processes of death still moved, albeit at a delayed rate. Above the dead, the hive rose up to the pale blue sky, its spire pointing at the ships hanging above like the accusing finger of a corpse. Archimus watched as the procession approached. Every figure looked tattered and bloody, but they had made their best effort to hold on to some sort of dignity. A block of infantry came first, their silver and red brocade coats buttoned to their necks, laslocks held at port. They marched with precision, but Archimus could see the stains on the fabric. Bandages wound over the face of a soldier, fresh blood bright beside the ochre of dried pus. The jaw of a trooper in the front rank was bound shut, and her head had the asymmetric slumped look of a fractured skull. Behind the infantry came their officers and commanders, each of them raised above the ranks on sprung caliper boots. Their faces were grim and their eyes hard, but there was something broken behind the defiance of their expressions. Last of all came the world prince, thin as a bare branch, silvered robes flowing down to spill over the edge of his palanquin. 12 slaves in blank masks and bare torsos bore the dais chair forwards, sweat glistening on their muscles. Behind them, scribes, advisers, and courtiers followed in a loose gaggle. All of them had the blank-eyed look of people who had just had everything they knew and relied on vanish. Of all the procession, only the world prince himself did not wear surrender on his face. He stared out at the battlefields, eyes never even turning towards those waiting for him, anger screaming from him in silent waves. Rogaldorn waited with his commanders on top of a low hill just beyond the trench lines encircling the hive. 10,000 imperial fists stood on the field around him, and beyond them, 500,000 soldiers of the imperial army stood at attention. Tens of thousands of tanks and war machines sat between the ranked figures. A trio of titans stood above them, their vast pennants shifting slowly in the breeze. It was a spectacle of might and power that would have brought some to their knees, but not the ruler of this newly conquered land. "Still defiant," said Yonad from just in front of Archimus. The fleetmaster was bareheaded, and the cold air stirred the dark hair above his hawk face. His eyes were hard black chips embedded in the rust of his skin. "His kingdom is in ruin, his army's broken, but he's still fighting us in his heart." "That is not defiance," said Sigismund without looking around. "That is disdain. This man does not have the grace to know that he has been granted the chance to be part of something greater. So, instead, he chooses to pretend that he has won a victory. Was there ever greater folly?"
"It is human to want to cling to the past," said Rogaldorn, his voice low. "Always remember that, my sons."
"Lord," said the commanders, bowing their heads as they spoke. Archimus alone did not move. Above him the legion banner rippled in the wind, the silver lightning bolts and sable fists stirring on their field of gold. He felt the standard pole tug at his grasp in the gusting air, but he remained unmoving. Beside him and the Primarch, 20 huskarls stood in double rank, black cloaks hanging from their backs, bolters held across their chests. Beside them, 20 of the Templar brethren stood with drawn swords. On Rogaldorn's left, the towering bulk of Alexis Pollux stood beside Yonad. The fleetmaster's apprentice in void warfare was as stone-faced as always, his eyes cold. On Dorn's right was Sigismund in the black-and-white heraldry of his office, his sword in his hand. Armed and armoured, Rogaldorn stood like a burnished statue between them. Began Yonad, and then stopped, his mouth open as though he did not wish to bite down on his next words. Did the other legion not wish to be present for this?
Clearly not, said Sigismund.
Silence fell again as the procession crossed the last meters of ground. The world prince, on his palanquin, came to a halt. His guard came to attention with a snap of taut muscle and poised weapons. Archimus noted a bead of blood slowly running from under the edge of a bandage swathing the face of one of the soldiers. She did not move from attention as it ran down her face. He felt admiration touch his thoughts, and made note to find these warriors once this was done. The Imperium needed those with such strength.
Imperium victor!
Called Archimus, his voice echoing from the grill of his helm. In sequence, each of the Imperial fists and human soldiers heard the words and echoed them. The cry rose and rose until the air seemed to be made of sound. Archimus raised the Imperial fists banner high, and the entire force came to attention, the movement rippling outwards from Rogal Dawn. Archimus saw some of the defeated officers flinch at the sound and movement. The World Prince looked at Dawn at last, and his eyes glittered with rage. When he spoke, his voice shook with control. My son, my nephews, my father, my brothers, my cousins, make no mistake that you have bought this world with their blood. And we shall remember. Rogal Dawn met the man's shaking gaze.
I stand before you and offer what was offered before, that you may become part of the Imperium of Mankind, that you may know the truth of illumination and live without fear of the dark. For this, the Emperor demands that you give him loyalty and follow his wisdom and the rule of those to whom he has given authority.
The World Prince looked back, lips twisting over his teeth, hands flexing on the arms of his chair.
As ruler of this domain,
he said at last, chewing off each word and spitting it out, and master of its people, I
yield to you and offer fealty to the Emperor.
Silence followed as Rogal Dawn continued to look at the man.
When you speak those words, he said at last, his voice low and cold, you kneel.
The World Prince blinked, and for a moment Archimus thought he was about to say something. Then the man lowered his gaze and gestured at his palanquin bearers. Slowly, the muscle brutes lowered the weight from their shoulders. The World Prince did not stand, but slumped forwards from his chair to his knees, as though the strength to stand had fled from him. Behind him, the procession that had followed the prince out to meet their conquerors knelt and pressed their foreheads into the dust of their world. Rogal Dawn bowed his head in acknowledgement.
In the name of the Emperor of Mankind, I accept your fealty, said Dawn.
And though he did not raise his voice, his words seemed to roll to the horizon. 2. It was night when they came to the Spire Palace. The one-time seat of a royal cousin, it now served a different purpose, its servants and slaves replaced by command officers and military serfs. Since the world's surrender, the mechanisms of imperial conquest had ground into motion and were already breaking and remaking the defeated society. Surveyor forces were sweeping the population, cataloguing resources and assessing existing social structures. Military forces were being evaluated, and plans drawn up to redistribute the most able into crusade forces. The first battalions from the conquered world would join a crusade force within 12 weeks to help conquer others. Iterators had been at work within the masses, and the world's compliance shaped into a narrative that would let the population come to see their new situation with pride. Rogal Dawn had moved between each facet of the operation, hearing the plans of generals and meeting with the humans who would shepherd the world into its new future. He had not stopped, and he had weighed each decision, both great and small, as though it were of equal importance to all the others. Archemus had once heard the great iterator Evander Tobias describe it as a total lack of toleration of anything but complete precision or competence. And the description was as adequate a portrait of the Primarch's focus as Archemus could think of. But like so many pithy epithets, it fell short of the truth. Archemus had watched Dawn at work for over a century, and never once had he seen his path waver or deviate from its course. He did not simply wage war. He was changing the world he moved through by force of will. That had caused trouble in the past, the kind of conflict that came when such a drive met an equally great force on a different course. And it was going to cause trouble now. Archemus had known it as soon as he learned what other force was to share this victory with them. They reached the space in front of the palace's throne room. Guards from the 7th Outremar elite stood to either side of the silver and jade doors, power spears held at attention. Dawn turned and met the eyes of his commanders.
"You have done well, my sons," he said,
and Archemus knew that this would be the only word that Dawn would give on the conduct of his warriors. There was no need to say anything more. Each of them bowed their heads. Dawn